Here we are on Daf Samech Vav Omer Aleph. Did we leave any? We were like a little bit rushed at the end last time. Did we leave off any? We're talking about Potchin Le. You finished that, okay. So the new Mishnah, we have all these very small, teeny tiny little sugyot. So the Mishnah at the top of the page says, "Potchin biyamim tovim v'shabbatot." When looking for a petach to give somebody who wants to do hataret nedarim a way out, so the Mishnah says, "Samach v'avamalav." The Mishnah says you can use Shabbos and Yontif as a petach. The case of kitniot and Pesach. No, the Mishnah is talking that somebody takes you see the Ran tonight. We'll rely on the Ran a lot. Sha'omim lo ilu haiti yodea she asur lehitzta'er b'Shabbat. Guy takes a neder. He says I'm not going to eat any meat. But not because he's a vegan, not because he's found a healthy lifestyle, but because he wants, you know, it's a kind of like an ascetic type of thing. He's not eating meat, and he's suffering for it. But that means on Shabbos he's not going to be able to eat meat. On Yontif he's not going to be able to eat meat. Now, you know that the poskim have all dealt with this. Technically, it's mutter to be a vegetarian, but Chazal couldn't, like, understand such a thing. Like, for Chazal, the idea of being a vegetarian was almost simultaneous, synonymous with being mitzta'er, with the type of, you know, self-abnegation, which they kind of couldn't get their heads around. So for this person, not eating meat on Shabbos Yontif is a form of tzar, but he kind of backed himself into a corner through this neder where he took a neder where he says, I'm not going to eat meat or drink wine. So they can say to him, if you would have known that it's usur to be mitzta'er, to cause anguish to yourself on Shabbos, hayta noder, iyamar lav, matir noto, says the Ran.
So here's how the language is. It's definitely that if you knew it was usur l'hitzta'er, not if you knew you would...
That's what the Ran says. That's what the Ran says, but yeah. In other words, his act of not eating, because remember, this is in the context of these Mishnayos, where somebody takes a neder, which kind of puts him up against the Torah. So I assume that's why the Ran interprets that way.
The other possibility would seem much more likely, that you knew it was usher to be there, but you just had no idea that would cause you that
how difficult it would be to have a vegetarian
like
shult.
Case than if you happen to not know there was usher to not be...
Right, so correct, except I assume that the Ran follows that line of interpretation because in the context of all these Mishnayot, these are talking about people that kind of like I keep saying, they kind of like paint themselves into a corner. I keep using that example of halachic, painting yourself into a halachic corner. When I was a kid, my dad and I painted. We had this like unfinished basement. You know, the floor of the basement was just, you know, the house that we moved into when I was in third grade had an unfinished basement, and it had just kind of like a poured concrete floor. So he had in his head that we were gonna paint the floor to make it look nice. So we had got these rollers and paint buckets, and I think he intentionally let me literally paint myself into a corner, so that he could teach me this lesson. And you know, my yekish personality may be a result of those kinds of experiences. I'm saying, Jean, what were you gonna say?
I was thinking about it being consistent with the Tfisa of Chazal, lo labdato, that you know that of course everybody knows that. That if you don't eat meat, you're going to be mitzta'er.
Right.
So it has to be what he says, that he didn't know that was us.
That it was us. Yafeh. Okay, but okay, so that's true. But it's also true that within the context of these Mishnayot, mm-hmm. you could interpret it, and certainly the modern sensibility would naturally interpret this Mishnah if taken out of context the way David just suggested. But I think, Shalom, you're right that within the mindset of Chazal, not our modern, that in other words, he knows that not eating meat is mitzvah for him. And that may be what motivated his neder. He took a neder in order to kind of be mitzvah. But what he hadn't considered was that this creates a halachic problem on Shabbos and Yontif. And again, within the context of the Mishnah, I think that's what the Ran is getting at.
Why do we need this extra thing? In other words, we already talked about that you can't take something that goes against the Torah. So you could just say, oh, it goes against the Torah. We can use that petach. Why do we need this extra petach?
Yeah, because this is probably a derabbanan. In other words, Onik Shabbos is probably a chiv derabbanan. So eating, according to all opinions, someone who according to the most stringent opinion about vegetarian lifestyle, and there are such opinions in the poskim that it's also to be vegetarian on Shabbos and Yantif. It's not the way we poskim, but even that would say it's only the Siddur Abonim. So it could be that that's part of the point. But it's the reason that the point is raised here, because this case of being matir creates a different dynamic, which we're about to see. And that dynamic is this. Barishona hayu omrin otana yamim mutari. So a guy goes to be matir. He has no problem being a vegetarian Sunday to Friday. The problem is that this vegetarianism, his neder, causes a halachic problem on Shabbos. So initially, he'd go for Hataras Nadar, and what would be the Hatara? That on Shabbos you're allowed to eat. On Yontif you're allowed to eat meat. But you may whole, you should still keep by your Ned there. In other words, they would read that Hataras Nadarim would be not really a Hataras Nadarim, but really a redefinition of the neder. Had you known that it was Ostim and Mitzdar on Shabbos, would you have taken the neder for Shabbos, or would you have taken the neder just for Yemot HaChol? Somebody can take a neder on Yemot HaChol, I won't eat meat. Right? So originally, they would say, so in this case, so there is a chiddush here. Even if this halacha, the halacha of like taking a neder against the mitzvah is identical to the previous Mishnayos, but here there's something new, because it's not always a mitzvah. It's not always the case. Yes, David.
I think examples after Korban HaBayit said that we're going to eat meat or drink wine or anything. That would be an example of probably someone who it wasn't like they were just trying to, personally, but they felt that it was necessary to go across the board. And then they
yes, there is in the Gemara and discusses this possibility. Vishar kolayam imasurin. So originally you'd be usher for eating meat on Shabbos and Yontif. They'd be matir you to eat on Shabbos and Yontif, but the rest of the week it would still be usher to eat meat. Ad shabor Rabbi Akiva, vilimed shehaneder shehutar michlalo hutar kulo. There's a different girsa here in the Gemara. Neder shehutar miktsato hutar kulo. That once you can knock down one element of the neder, the whole neder falls. There's no reason to be matir this guy to eat meat on any given Tuesday night. Right? We should say on Shabbat. No, but Rabbi Akiva says once there's one, this neder, right? There are 7 days in the week. So this neder means on Sunday you can't eat meat, Monday you can't eat meat, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. Once you have to be matir him to eat meat on Shabbos, so then the whole neder is invalidated. The whole neder is released.
But in practical terms, why do you need to keep it? Because the person could say if he wanted to, it's too hard for me to not eat.
But that's not what his claim is.
I know, but so right? He's what? Not getting. So his claim is.
It's too hard for me not to eat meat is not an adequate petach to be matir the neder. Sorry, Charlie. Nedarim are difficult.
Had I known that it would be so hard to not eat meat, I wouldn't have made the neder. It's not a valid petach for.
Not in and of itself. Not in and of itself. So look at the Ran Shekone de Shehutar Michlalo or Hutar Miktsato Hutar Kulo Yalfin and Labi Yerushalmi Midichtiv Kechol Hayotse Mipiv Yase. Where's that posuk? Parshat Matot, where we learn the dinim of Nedarim. Right. So what's the operative word in that posuk? Kechol. Kol. Right? Everything that comes out of your mouth, you have to do. And if a piece of what came out of your mouth, we evaluate the neder as a whole. If a piece of the neder can't be fulfilled, so then the whole thing falls. Dafka bishikulo kayam. When the neder in its entirety, but once you... What's that game? We play with our kids with the blocks. What?
Jenga.
Not operation. Jenga, right? You pull one, once you pull one thing at the bottom, the whole thing comes toppling down. Ketzad, so how does this work? So Omar, konam she'eni nehene lekulchen. Somebody's facing a crowd of people. And he takes a neder, she'eni nehene lekulchen. Right? You can imagine somebody, I don't know, being angry at a crowd. Imagine like, I don't know.
Yes,
no, that's absolutely right. I was going to say, imagine like the rabbi, like he knows that, right? So you take a neder. Hutar echad mehem, hutra kulan. So if it turns out that your father, or your wife, or somebody for whom you have a special need not to have such a neder against Hanof for them, you say, look, had I known my father was in the crowd, I wouldn't have taken the neder against the entire crowd because I have obligations of kibud av. Had I known my wife was in the crowd, I wouldn't have taken such a neder because I have special obligations to my wife. That's the previous mission about being forced to, if you intentionally take a neder like that regarding your wife, so you might be forced to divorce her, right? So if you go and you say, look, I took this neder against the whole, there were 500 people in the shul, right? But had I known that my wife or my father were in the crowd, I wouldn't have taken the ned there. So once you're mater, the wife or the father, one out of 500 people, the whole ned there is mutter. She'eni nehene laze ulaze. Right? A different case. Instead of saying kulchem, all of you. Right? He's standing in front of a few people, and he's at a cocktail party. And he looks at two people, or he points to two people and says, I make a neder against this guy and against this guy. Right? Against Reuven and against Shimon. Hutar harishon, hutru kulan. So if, for some reason, he can get a hatarat nadarim for his neder against Reuven, so then Shimon also becomes mutar. Hutar achron, achron mutar v'kulan asurim. But if he can get a hatarah, he makes a neder against Reuven, and against Shimon, and against Levi. So if for whatever reason he can get a hataras nedarim for Levi, so then Levi becomes mutar, but Reuven and Shimon remain asur. Because it's sequential. You made a neder against this guy, and against that guy, and against the other guy. When you're playing the Django, right, if you pull out one from the middle, all the ones above are going to fall, but the ones below will not. Here it's the opposite. You look at the list in the order that it was made, whichever one you can be matir, from him and the subsequent become mutter, but not the ones above. Because you look at the neder kind of both as as a whole, but also as its component parts. Right? So you say, I make a neder against Reuven and against Shimon and against Levi. So if you can knock out Shimon, you still what is left? I make a neder against Reuven, period. That still exists as a kind of valid halachic statement that could come out of your mouth. Right? It's like, in other words, you're doing like a, what would you call that? Like an audio Photoshop. That's probably just called audio editing, right? But you can't splice it. Because you have to take a whole fragment of the sentence that can stand on its own. So I make a neder against Reuven. You could insert a comma there that exists on its own. and Shimon. If you take that out, everything subsequent to it gets knocked out. Hutar ha'emtza'i, you see this in parentheses, the Masoros and Shas says this is not technically part of the Brisa. This is not technically part of the Mishnah. What's in parentheses is a Brisa that was inserted in for unclear reasons. Normally we don't do that in the text of the Mishnah, but it's not technically part of the Mishnah, but it doesn't matter because it's just it's explanatory. Hutar ha'emtza'i himenu v'lamata mutar himenu l'mala asur. Right? You have a few. You have five people. So if you can knock out one in the middle from him and on, and from him and above, still stands.
So why the no splicing rule? I mean, why can you cut off an entire fragment but you can't splice the fragment out of the middle?
Because that's the idea.
It also fits with the puzzle. Because you said, so you did say that I'm like being Moserai, you know, when I'm Reuben and Shimon, so I didn't say Levi, but that initial part, what I did say is still true.
Right. Now let's say I make a neder against Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, and you get rid of Shimon. So what you would really be left with would be like saying, I make a neder against Reuben and Levi. Right?
Yeah,
so the blank that's in the middle, it's as if it's been, you know, like on
and
the Nixon tapes.
Kechol asher tzivitcha, kechol asher, what is it, kechol asher amarta?
Kechol ayotzei mipiv yaseh.
Yeah, I know. What you're saying is it's like a piece of tin.
That's my metaphor.
No, it's a good metaphor. I made it, and on the tape it says, I made an edit of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And you found the way to be Mati here on number 3. So there's nothing you can do besides cut the rest of the tape out. You can't cut the middle part of the tape out, is what you're saying.
No, because think about it. What do you have? Then you have a statement that says, I make a neder against Reuven, blank, 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 and Levi. So what was there in the blank? So we know that it was and Shimon. But it could have been, I make a neder against Reuven, and I do not make a neder against Levi. In other words, the statement, it's not that
because
we...
Because you have to blank, it's like a shtar. If you rip up part
it's,
of it,
right.
You don't know what's left.
Right.
But you could arguably say that the Beit Din could simply, by removing the piece in the middle, is enabling you to reconstruct the neder. I mean, I understand what you're saying, you know, what the Mishnah is saying in the analogy, but I also don't understand why the opposite logic wouldn't also be true.
Because it's very simple. You knock out Shimon. Therefore, subsequently, you knock out.
Yeah. So as you see, the Ran says.
Come back afterwards and make a neder against.
The Ran says Shaharishonim einam tluyim bo. Right. In other words, it's like a chain. Right. Now think of it as a chain. Something hanging from a chain. Right. So you cut the chain in the middle. So I didn't cut those 10 links below that chain, but they're all going to fall. But the links that are hanging from the ceiling above that remain.
Okay.
You understand the idea, but the mechanics...
don't understand the rationale behind it.
Yeah, it would seem to be to displace the tape.
Okay, so you can't. So Chazal put you...
Okay.
But you're right. You could just make a new neder.
Again,
you can always make a new neder, but right? But look. In other words, here's the problem of metaphor. This metaphor of editing a tape is not perfect because, first of all, we're using a metaphor to explain concepts in a world that would not have understood the metaphor that we're using. One second. The chain is good, and the chain works better, but the metaphor wouldn't work for them, and it really would be the case to think of it as a shtar that has things blanked out. So, shani nene laze korban ulaze korban, srichin petach lekol echad veechad. But if you say if you say that I take a neder of a korban means like it's usher to me as if it were me'ila. Right? That's to call it a korban is a nickname for a neder where you say you're not going to get hanof from it. So if I say I take a neder like a korban from Reuven, and I take a neder like a korban from Shimon, right? Since you're making it explicit, the condition is being explicit on each of them instead of a blanket. I'm taking a neder of a korban on Reuven, Shimon, Levi. So then each one stands on its own. And you'd need Hatarat Nedarim for each and every one of them. And they're not interdependent, where if you can knock out one, you knock out the other.
What does it mean, Lizek Korban? What's the...
No, that's the Lashon of a... That's one of the Lashonos of a Ned there. To say that I'm Nene Lizek Korban, meaning like I'm treating this guy, he's Usser Bahanot to me, as if he was a, like the same way it's also to get Hano, it's also Meila is Usser on a Korban. It's a nickname for the Lashon of a neder. Tzichim petach lekol echad v'echad. Konam yayin she'ani to'em shehayayin role me'ayim. Here's another din. You take a neder against wine, but you explain why you're taking the neder against wine.
When this neder might have been taken? Sounds like you know, the morning after you woke up from drinking a lot of wine.
it's a neder you make when you're hungover. But as you say, because wine is bad for the digestion. Wine is bad for the stomach. Amrulo, v'halo hayayin amiyushan yafel le'me'ayin. So they said, wait a second, it's true that wine is bad for digestion. Except certain types of wine. Aged wine is dafka, good for the digestion. You know, it's like what's good today is bad tomorrow. When Teddy Roosevelt was a kid, his father, like a kid, like 4 or 5 years old, his father used to give him to smoke every night from his cigar. Why? Because young Teddy had asthma. And everybody knows smoking is good for asthma. It clears out the bronchioles. So your conception of what's good for you today is not always the case. They have not yet come back and said smoking is good for you again.
No?
I don't know.
I haven't heard of anything yet.
Yeah. Well, it's like coffee. You can follow it. Sunday it's good for you. Monday it's bad for you.
You know what's really unhealthy? Worrying about it. My grandparents, they smoked, they drank, my grandmother drank a cup of coffee, the spoon would stand up, it was so strong, right? And they lived, you know why? Because they didn't worry about it, they thought it was good. So they say to him, V'halo amiyushan yafe lemeayim, hutar b'miyushan. So if they say to him, what did he say? He said,
I'm going to also wine.
I'm also wine because it's bad for you. So which kind of wine is bad for him? The kind of wine which is bad for him. But the kind of wine which is dafka good for him. So the Mishnah says, V'lo b'miushan v'lvad hutar, ela b'chol ayayin. Right? So once you can, once you're matir, the Yain Miushan, so we don't look at Yain Miushan as a different species than regular wine. So in other words, what kind of neder was this? It was a kind of neder tov.
Because what you're really saying to the person is you're wrong.
Right.
And you're giving them a fact. One fact is that the old wine is...
Sounds kind of like the first case.
How?
Because... You find something wrong with the neder, so you just...
No, in other words, but it's a different type of thing that's wrong. In the case of Potchim B'Shabbat V'Yom Tov...
So had I known it
was,
that I...
No. It was because he took a neder, which kind of inadvertently caused a halachic problem. Here, there's a factual error. There's a factual error. His facts were wrong, right? So it's not that he needs Hatarat Nedarim, right? It's not matirin lo. It's hutar. It's a neder ta'ut doesn't need Atar Nedarim. B'miushan velo b'miushan bilvad hutar. Ela b'chol ayayin. Konam. Now you could imagine if you've like learned enough Gemara to imagine like what this sugya might be asking. Now it happens that the Gemara here does not ask this. But on this Mishnah about Yayin and Yayin Miushan, like what kind of question would you imagine? It's a handy exercise, right? If you've learned enough Gemara. So you learn a Mishnah, you haven't yet learned the Gemara. But ask yourself, what kind of questions do I anticipate the Gemara will ask? What well, kind of to, issues would
you say that? Look, for me, wine maybe will kill my stomach. For some people, it is. It's not an
In other words, it's conditional. For some people, really, wine really is bad.
I'm not going to drink wine anymore because it's bad for my stomach. That may actually be true.
For you. So here the Mishnah is talking not about conditional cases, but for this, wine generally is very healthy, but for this guy, he's got a condition, he can't drink any wine. The Gemara is taking it as a kind of given that, you know, for a regular healthy person, these foods are healthy and these foods are unhealthy. But what kind of question would you anticipate the Gemara would raise here?
I don't know about a question directly, but the language of this sounds like a previous Mishnah that we saw that saying that he taking a neder and he's then following that up with that such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
All right, so that's a theoretically that's kind of question Gemara might raise. Do we need this Mishnah, or is this Mishnah redundant to a previous Mishnah?
Or maybe this is arguing with that, or it's part of the same argument then.
So I would have thought that the Gemara would ask questions like, are all wines the same thing? Right? In other words, are all wine, there's all the different types of wine. There's spiced wine, there's spiced wine, there's aged wine, there's new wine, there's wine mixed with other things, there's champagne, there's bubbly wine. So when we say we're matir wine, because some wines are good, so then all wines are matir. What does it mean, all wines? Are all wines, is vermouth included? Is vermouth wine? What's vermouth?
It's not scotch.
That's a fine.
It's some kind of alcohol made from wine.
Berries, huh?
What? It's a flavored wine. It's wine. Vermouth, that's why you can't just go into a bar and order a martini. Because a martini is made with vermouth, and vermouth is a wine product which needs texture.
Right?
And it's a wine that's spiced with, I don't know what, juniper berry? I don't know, something.
That's gin, right?
Oh, gin is juniper. If only there was some kind of worldwide resource that could answer these questions.
Gin isn't wine-based.
Gin isn't wine-based. But vermouth is wine-based. So is vermouth Rampa included? So when we're going to be mate him from is it all types of wine? Is it only some types of wine? That's the kind of question. The next case the Mishnah gives, konam batzal sha'ani to'em, sha'batzal ra lalev. Onions are bad for the heart. Amru lo v'halo ha'kufri yafel alev. A kufri is a type of batzal. What kind of batzal is it? I don't know. Does Jainzals tell you what kind of batzal it is?
Batzal shel kfarim.
Batzal shel kfarim.
V'yesh batzalim batzalim ketanim.
Little shallots, maybe. Mm-hmm. No? What's a shallot? A shallot is a mix of an onion and a garlic. Probably not. So maybe this means this is the little olive. This is the little onion you put into the martini.
The pearl onion.
So anyway, the point is, it's a variety of onion. It's a variety of onion. So zav halo hakufri, which either means batzal that comes from a kfar, or some other variety of onion, is good for the heart. Hutar b'kufri velo b'kufri belvad hutar ela b'chol ha'betzalim.
Seems kind of different though.
And not only is it a theoretical halacha, it's an actual halacha. How is it that the betzalim is different than the wine?
No, but it says like kufri is probably different enough from what.
Aye.
I mean, it's not just, you know, you have big onions and little onions and small onions, but the kufri is I mean, a different thing. It's just from the onion family.
It's a variety of onion. Then as you go to the store, we go to the store, and we get in an onion, and it's all the same onion. I mean, there's onion and there's red onion.
Right. A scallion.
And there's scallion also. So if you want to say it's hutar b'chol ha'betzalim, is scallions part of that?
Well, scallion is a young onion, just an earlier stage.
But maybe, I don't know, so this is
the same thing or not.
I don't know, but the point is that, and as this is a question you would anticipate the Gemara asking, you know, what are included in the onions and what are not included in the onions. But the Gemara does not ask this question. But
two things. First of all, it could be that here in the case of the onions, it's different in the case of the wines, because if you pour two glasses of wine, okay,
mm-hmm.
and one is a dry wine that's good for the digestion, and one is a sweet Manischewitz wine which is not good for the digestion, they both look exactly the same. You won't, unless you go up and you taste them, you won't tell the difference. But if you put out a kufli or you put out an onion, you could say, wait, I know that looks different. That looks different. Okay. So it's maybe, but my question, so
that's why you need both cases.
Right. My question is this. What if today we say, okay, so dry wines are good for the digestion, so therefore we're going to allow you dry wines. And sweet wines are not, you're not going to be allowed to.
Right.
And then it comes along tomorrow and they say exactly the opposite.
So in our days, what's healthy and what's not changes every other day. In the times of Chazal, it also changed, but not quite as rapidly. So you can imagine that things remained a little more consistent, and that problem of having to say, when you say, I take a neder, I'm not going to eat anything unhealthy, as if everything is binary. It's either healthy or it's not healthy, right? But you wouldn't be able to, between breakfast and lunch, you wouldn't be able to eat without checking to stop to see what's what. In times of Chazal, there was like a better kind of sense of what was healthy and what wasn't healthy, or what was good for digestion, what wasn't good for digestion, right? The Rambam himself, you know, has very clear ideas about this, but the Rambam is sure that Chazal didn't necessarily know what they were talking about, but he was sure that he knew what he was talking about. And we're pretty sure that the Rambam didn't know, or that our conceptions of this have changed. So some people want to say, so how could it be? How could a Chazal say that this is good for you, that's bad for you, when we know it's not true? So there's two answers to that question. All of the medical advice in Chazal, right? So there's, which does not seem to correlate with anything that we know at all about medicine. So how do we resolve that problem? There are two ways to resolve the problem.
Either what we know now is, either we know more now than what they knew then, or the times that they had then, that was my team, and it's not my team now.
Yes, so the second answer that you give is the classical answer of Nishtana Hatzvayim, that the state of nature has changed. Okay, whatever that means. It is a kind of line of reasoning that Chazal and Rishonim put forth.
The famous size of the olives.
Right. The other answer, which is the Rambam's preferred answer, is that no, when Chazal tell you what's healthy and what's not healthy, they're not paskening halacha, right? The way they do about whether this activity is a malacha on Shabbos, you know, or not. They're giving you the guide. What Chazal were paskening, you have to live a healthy lifestyle. It's useful for them to kind of indicate what a healthy diet looks like. When they do that, they're outlining according to their best information, which was gleaned from the medical knowledge of their day. What they're being koveya lahalacha is the importance of eating a healthy lifestyle. Fill in the blank according to the best knowledge available to you in each day. We modernists, rationalists, Rambamists tend to orient ourselves around the second interpretation.
It takes something like fish and meat together.
Right.
So that's
so all of these. So Chazal had an idea that there were certain things that were misukan,
right.
And they even said chamira sakanta misura.
Right. And yet,
one of them is this idea of not eating fish and meat together.
So you see people who, I don't know, they'll smoke and they won't eat fish and meat together.
It's a shaila. So one approach is to say that these things, so that nishtana hatzvayim, that
so there's a kibua of these concepts to a degree. So
certain things that like do get established.
We don't do the dog's tooth or whatever over the bed, but we don't. You know.
Right. So certain things that get established as, you know, like force of minhag.
Maimonides.
Well, my machronim is there's two reasons. One reason my machronim is that there were these salts that if they got in your eye, you go blind. So we don't seem to know about these salts. The other is that it's proper before you say God's holy name in Birkat HaMazon that you should be naki. Just like there's a din, you should wipe off when you eat. You get on your beard and your mustache. You get a little bit of a little schmaltz, a little whatever. It's a lo mechubad to bench with a dirty mouth. But you have a mustache. What do you love? You never. Your mustache never got dirty. So, right. So it's not proper to bench if you're not in a mechubid kind of state. So you should wash your hair. Even the fancy people used to have finger bowls, right? And certainly, as Professor Chaim Soloveitchik pointed out, the use of forks is a very late innovation. Very, very late in European history, and people used to eat with their head. If you watch these period dramas, what was this one about Henry VIII? Any old movie with Henry VIII, which always includes scenes of fat old Henry, you know, getting rid of this wife and finding another wife before she gets her head chopped off, and eating because he was big and fat. But the way they eat, like they had, it wasn't a fork. It was like, you know, like when you have a carving set, right? You have that thing to hold it. So that's what it looked like. And they would tear the meat off with their hands. They would eat it with their hands.
A great book, if you're interested, called Consider the Fork, came out like last year. It's about this whole thing of how the utensils developed.
Uh-huh, okay. So anyway, the point being, so for my machronim, there's two reasons given. And even if you don't have the, even if this medical fear seems to have been lost to us, the other reason still stands. So,
by the way, in the fish and the meat, it's hard to imagine in any setting, forget Jewish or anything like that, somebody putting like a piece of fish and a piece of meat on the same plate. If you're,
why?
They don't. That was a separate dish for the fish.
Huh? Okay. What about the Worcestershire surf and turf? Yeah, that's right. But that's lobsters.
But they serve on separate dishes.
Okay.
They put the steak together with the lobster on the same plate.
Unless it's very germane to this.
Plus one of the cheap.
My question is this. The case of the wine, could it be that the Quran brings up later that they use wine from its slot, and you can be paid to yourself at the Quran because that would be the only wine available one does it. And then
that's not, the Gemara does not raise that possibility. It's talking about something else.
Well, that's actually what Tosfos says. Not talking about, Tosfos says in the initial case, we talked about it as even meat. Tosfos says talking about wine in the initial case.
In the first case. Echoliot. Look, the Nazir also has the problem. As the Nazir is, also makes a neder against wine, which, you know, might be why. Even though the Nazir is a mitzvah in the Torah itself views the Nazir as, not just Chazal, the Torah itself views the Nazir as problematic. You don't have to drink wine yourself. Somebody else can make kiddush for you. There is a problem for the Arba Koso. There's a problem for the Arba Koso. So the Gemara says, Hutar ha'achron, ha'achron mutar, v'kulan asurin. So that idea that when you have the list, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, you get rid of Shimon, so Levi also becomes mutar, but Reuven remains asur. Man Tana, who's the Tana that taught this idea in the Mishnah? Omar Rava, Rabbi Shimon. The Omar, Rabbi Shimon says in the Gemara in Shavuos, you see there Shavuos Lamed Chet, the Omar ad shi Omar Shvua l'chol echad ve'echad. So the sugi over there is talking about Shvuat ha-Pikadon. Shvuat ha-Pikadon. So if somebody comes and claims that they gave you money to hold, they gave you a Pikadon, and you now deny that you have it, he can force you to go to Beis Din and take a Shavua, which is a very serious matter, and people are careful not to take a Shavua L'Shav, in order to prove, as a form of proof, that you are in fact telling the truth. The claimant can force you to take a Shavua. So if a lot of people come, and make this claim, here, look at the Ran here in the Gemara. Mantana, Dimidikatani laze korban ulaze korban, srichin petach lekol echad vechad. Alma de le olam lo have pirta, prata, ella ki midik ki midi kar korban akol chad v'chad. So unless he said, and as if he says, I make it a korban against Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, so then he needs for each and every one. Then he needs one for all of them. But if he says a korban for Reuven, a korban for Shimon, a korban for Levi, so then if he mentions a korban for each and every one of them, so then if he gets rid of Shimon in the middle, so Levi still stands because he said for Levi the whole statement a korban for Levi.
V'ha lav hachi lo shna amar laze ulaze bivav o laze laze bilovav klala.
And as if he says a korban for Shimon, Levi, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, or Reuven and for Shimon and for Levi.
Have uman tana amar rava Rabbi Shimon hi the amar beperek shvuat hapikadon. Oh, it's lamed vav. It's shvuos daf lamed vav. Gabe hayu chamisha tovein oto va'amar lo lacha velo lacha. To the olam eino chayav al kol echad ve'echad ad shiomar shvua al kol echad ve'echad. Halav hachi bein bevav bein below vav kol.
So it's what if five people, five separate people come, and they all say, he has a pikadon of theirs. He's holding money of theirs, right? So does he have to take? Is one shavua good enough for all five, or does he have to take for each and every? All right, so we'll pick up here next time.